Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. We welcome you in live from Los Angeles. First day of the NBA season, one where we honestly don't know who's going to play for a championship. Think about that. How many years has it been since you could honestly say, man, I don't know? And you're... Because in the past, you couldn't say, well, I don't know. Barring injury, the Warriors were going to be there. Right? Now we don't know. Give you my thoughts on what Steve Kerr of the Warriors is saying. Give you my thoughts on the early NBA season, the battle for LA. Suddenly, Kawhi Leonard with a couple of early commercials. Wonder if he'll be throwing some picks and catch the wrath of Cowherd. We'll find out. That's the Baker Mayfield calling. Never mind. Let's get to what we saw last night. I have told you, as the father of three, that people who are not parents or have itty-bitty cute little wubby babies believe that the terrible twos are the worst age to raise toddlers. Terrible goes with twos, and it just makes sense, right? Everybody has a favorite stage. My favorite stage is like 6-7 months old. Ramos has a newborn baby, not yet 6-7 months old. 6-7 months old, they can coo, they can bat their eyes at you, they can get shy and smile, and their head kind of goes side to side, but they can't walk and they can't talk. It's incredible. It's incredible. But if you ask people who don't have kids or who are just having kids, hey, what is the toughest age to raise them? They will say, I don't know, terrible twos, right? And the terrible twos are not easy. They're not. There are fits for no apparent reason, right? There are lay down on the ground, throwing fits. They learn the word no. And they think they actually mean it. But what happens when you're raising kids is three is actually harder than two, not just in terms of number of kids, but in the age of kids. See, because once they're three, you no longer have the excuse of, oh, you know, terrible twos. Plus, once they're three, they move out of the crib into a big boy, big girl bed. They're usually out of diapers as well, at least I would hope so. And because they're three, you have greater expectations of them. But they're still not really in preschool. They're still just 3 years old. I bring that up because last night, Sam Darnold was like Oprah Winfrey giving out a car. And you get an interception. And you get an interception. And you get an interception. And the whole world is freaking out over Sam Darnold saying this.
We're going to keep bringing it. Seen ghosts.
This was Kyle Van Noy, talented linebacker for the New England Patriots, when told that while mic'd up, Sam Darnold said he was seeing ghosts.
At one point on the ESPN broadcast that I felt like he was seeing ghosts up
Ooh,
there.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's the boogeyman. It's real.
You talk about the continuity of your defense. We're up front together.
Sorry. He really said that?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Well, how were you guys able to rattle him?
That's crazy for him to say that. That makes it real. You know what I'm saying?
And by the way, that's the real idea of people being mic'd up. Not this phony baloney BS. Let's go! Let's go! Right? Oh, we want the real stuff. We want that, man. I'm seeing ghosts out there. I thought you said, I got no idea what happened. Right? Here's Adam Gase, head coach of the Jets, about the leaked audio.
We'll be looking into that pretty hard. That was one of those things that was really disappointing to hear about after the game. I don't know if I've ever seen that where, you know, somebody that was mic'd up was basically, you know, a comment like that was allowed to be aired. It bothers me. It bothers the organization. I mean, obviously, we're going to be looking hard into, you know, our cooperation going forward.
Yeah, that means there will be no more mic'd up New York Jets quarterbacks or important players from now into as long as Adam Gase is there. Because it's clearly the microphone's fault that Sam Darnold played his worst game as a pro. Now, I've heard plenty of media head, and there's lots of media guys that are Jet fans, right? They're Met fans, they're Jet fans, they're Syracuse fans. That's what they are. They usually went to Syracuse, and they all got together like, who do you like? Like, let's all like the same teams. Because a lot of them grew up on Long Island or New York, whatever, and they like the second team. They don't know. Well, like, nobody grows up loving the Yankees. That's, you know. Anyway, let's get rid of Adam Gase. Sam Darnold's overrated. Like, didn't they just beat the Cowboys last week? They did. That did just happen. And what happened was a talented, inexperienced quarterback had his worst game as a pro against the best team in football. A team that can confuse even the best quarterback in the NFL. Right? Like, let's look. Do we remember how Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers looked the first week of the season? Like, well, Pittsburgh stinks. Like, no, they had Ben Roethlisberger, Hall of Fame quarterback, two-time Super Bowl winner, and he looked completely befuddled at the speed and elusiveness of that defense. But here's the bigger and more important and more salient point of Sam Darnold's 11 for 32, 86 yard, no touchdown, four interception, 3.6 quarterback rating game. 3.6 in quarterback ratings is essentially the Blutarski. Blutarski is Bluto from Animal House, who got a 0.0. Anyway, for those of you who are under 35, 40, you may not understand that reference. Here's the important point. I believe second-year quarterbacks are harder than first-year quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks. Because a rookie quarterback, you expect them to be bad. You expect them to be inexperienced. You expect them to make mistakes. Right? When you have a two-year-old, you expect them to poop their pants. You expect them to throw a fit. You expect them to say the word no. And with those lowered expectations come the raised expectations of when they're three. The same thing happens in their second year as a starter. Hey, Sam Darnold hadn't played that much football. Right? He started a year and three quarters in college. And he has not started two straight years here in the National Football League. He missed half of this season due to mono. He's playing against the best team. He's coming off his best game. And he had a bad one. He had a stinker. Three-year-olds are given just more, right? You let them stay up later. You let them sleep by themselves in a big boy, big girl bed. You take off the diapers and you put on the underwear. And every once in a while, they're going to make a doo-doo in that underwear. You'd be like, man, thought we were out of the stage. And second-year quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, you're going to sit there and say, well, they're veterans. Technically, they are veterans. They have 1 year of experience in the NFL. The guy on the other side of the ball has 20 years of experience. And hey, even sometimes those guys get confused. Those guys have bad games. Like, if you want to run Sam Darnold out of town because he had a game where he was seeing ghosts in his second year as a starting quarterback. Well, dude, we saw Tom Brady throw two in what should have been three interceptions in the AFC Championship game, making some mistakes, being confused against one of the worst defenses in football. Our expectations get raised because he's no longer a rookie. So we give them the entire playbook. And we call them veteran, the face of the franchise. But the truth is, he doesn't even have a year in the business yet. He's still very, very much a three-year-old. He's not 14, not 15, not 18, not 19. He's just a three-year-old. And your presumption is rookie quarterbacks. Man, rookie quarterbacks are tough because, yes, but you protect them. You only give them half the playbook and half the field, and you don't give them the ability to run check with me's and switch the play at the line of scrimmage. You run what we tell you to run, and that's it. And when you raise those expectations and you give them more of the playbook, sometimes this happens. The Jets weren't supposed to be good this year. They fired their GM after the free agency period in which he signed Le'Veon Bell to a contract above that to which anybody valued him at. Quinn and Williams got hurt the first game of the year. They're missing two starting offensive linemen last night. They're playing the best team in football. And sometimes three-year-olds soil their pants. And that's what happened last night.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome in Chris Sims, former NFL quarterback. And, of course, you see him football night in America. Your worst game as a pro was when?
Oh, my gosh. My worst game as a pro was probably, it might have been the opening game of the 2006 season against the Baltimore Ravens, you know, the year they got the late, great Steve McNair. Let's see, I think I threw three interceptions. I threw one as a pick six to the house, and I also almost killed Ray Lewis almost killed Michael Pittman because I left him exposed over the middle. So I would say that was my worst game as a pro.
How many years in the league was that?
Let's see. So that was 2006, and that was my fourth year in the NFL at that point. My fourth year and just kind of getting close to that one full year as a starter in the NFL number.
Were you seeing ghosts?
I was not seeing ghosts, no. Now, I get what you're getting to as far as Sam Darnold and everything last night. Now, that was a really good Baltimore Ravens defense I played that day, certainly. And did I mess up some things within the game that I want to go, I should have known that, or I should have checked to that. I knew better. But you get flustered at times. You know you're being overpowered. You start to maybe get rid of the ball a little too quickly because you have been hit, you know, five straight passes in a row, which then could lead to bad decisions. So last night is a really special defense with a really special coach who found an area of an offense, and this is Gase and Sam Darnold combined, he found that, hey, there's I don't think there's a contingency plan with their blitz package when they get in shotgun and pass and obvious passing situations, and he exposed Sam Darnold's lack of knowledge of how to protect it and where to go with the football, and Adam Gase's lack of a plan to react off of the blitzes you saw that caused so many of those turnovers.
Should Adam Gase is offended that that reached air? Should he be?
I don't think so. I don't think it was like the worst thing in the world. I think what he was, you know, first referring to, there's a lot of quarterbacks that have seen ghosts before. What it more or less is, I think he's referring to is, you know, there was a few times where I think he thought he was hot. And, oh, man, the pocket was good. So then he throws the ball, like, off balance or his feet aren't in the right place. You know, then the next time, you know, he's confused by coverage because then he's looking at the pass protection. Wait, did we pick everybody up? Is my mind right there? And then you don't see clearly down the field. I don't think it was that bad. That is normal quarterback-to-coach conversation, and I would especially expect that from a young guy like Sam Darnold who's yet to play a full season in the NFL.
I would, too. Yeah. Here's what I liken it to. You have kids.
Yep.
Before you had kids, what did you think the toughest age to raise young children was?
I probably would have thought like infancy, somewhere around there, like 1, 2, maybe 3 years old.
But like terrible two, like terrible twos, right?
Right.
So, and then people think that rookie quarterbacks are the toughest to have. But the difference is rookie quarterbacks, you're not giving them the whole field. You give them a script. You tell them, run the play. You know, maybe here's the one other option if you see something different. And that's all you're doing. Whereas in your second year, Now you're kind of the franchise guy. There's greater expectations. You're given the entire playbook.
True.
But you only, I mean, he only played 13 games last year. He didn't play a whole season. That's his 16th game.
Right.
He's a veteran per se, but not really a veteran, much like 3-year-olds are tougher than 2-year-olds because you have greater expectations of them, right? They're out. They're in the big girl yeah. bed, big boy bed. They're wearing underwear, not diapers. And right. yet sometimes they still soil themselves. A second-year quarterback is much like a 3-year-old.
It's a fair comparison. You're right, because it should be terrible threes, without a doubt. The threes, I thought, were way worse anyways than the twos. They're more mobile. They're speaking better. They talk back to you more. They say no more. So I get what you're saying there altogether. And, yes, it was a listen, Sam Darnold didn't play well. He certainly has to brush up on his protections. And the fact that that was a comment even made up here when he was going through the mononucleosis, I thought that, you know, was a little red flag in itself. Like, brush up on protections. That shouldn't be what we're worried about when we're off, you know, during mononucleosis time. So there's obviously a little lack of knowledge there where the coaches and the linemen have probably been picking up for him because of things like you said. He's got the full scope of the offense at his disposal now. And maybe protections, he wasn't perfect, so they try to take things off his plate. Hey, let our center, Khalil, do it. He's been around for a long time. He'll figure it out. Well, he can get fooled too. And then if that's not right, then the quarterback's not expecting that he's going to have to worry about it, and he does. So it was the Patriots, where they're great, they're geniuses, as we know. They're it's next level football as compared to the rest of the NFL. And where they're different is most front sevens do things to help their secondary. And in New England right now, they're so good in the secondary, they just go, oh, no, we're going to play man-to-man, or we're going to play three-deep zone, but we're so good at doing these things, we'll do creative things with the front seven that you've never seen before and really expose protection, run-blocking schemes, and things like that.
Chris Sims joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Should be pointed out they added Mohamed Sanu today in a trade. Second-round pick goes to Atlanta. Obviously, Atlanta stinks. Probably going to be a coaching change there. They're going to sell off some pieces.
Right.
What does Mohamed Sanu add to them?
Well, he's a perfect New England kind of guy, you know, and as you know, there's an affection there for Rutgers guys with Bill Belichick, and especially Rutgers guys that played for Greg Schiano, because he knows, just like he knows with a guy from Alabama, Nick Saban, or when it was back in the day with Urban Meyer in Florida, that these guys are going to be tough. They're going to be all about football. They can handle some ridicule on practice or on the game field. They're not going to be thin-skinned that way. So that aspect right away, they love that. But then a Mohamed Sanu is a versatile receiver. You know, he's a guy that can kind of work the middle of the field. They're missing that aspect, you know, with no Gronk. Now you got Sanu who can block in the run game, catch some screens, catch their little play-action passes over the middle and be fearless with linebackers and safeties bearing down on them. That's where he's unique, and I think that's mostly probably what they like about him is his versatility at the wide receiver position.
And a guy who can play quarterback, so he and Edelman can throw. Yeah. They can be a triple pass at some point in the very near future.
Oh, exactly. That's another thing. I mean, why is it that the best team in football for the last 19 years seems to also run the most trick plays? Like, would the rest of football catch up? I mean, even sometimes the team that's on their third dynasty runs trick plays to help them win games, but, like, the rest of football is like, oh, gosh, that's scary to run that trick play. I don't know if we can do that. Well, practice it for a while and then, you know, bring it out in a big moment like New England does every single freaking year.
I know it doesn't surprise you that Aaron Rodgers was awesome.
Yeah.
But, I mean, my take has always been Brady is the most accomplished, but in terms of who has the most game, it's Aaron Rodgers, and that was on display. Without his best wide receiver,
right?
He has arguably his best game as a pro. Is it him getting the offense or just a really, really good day?
Well, it's all of the above, and I'm with you with you know your thoughts. And people think I'm a jerk because I always say that. You know, yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. You know, there's a lot that goes into accomplish, and I think Brady's awesome. But I would go Rodgers, Elway, Brady. That's how I would name my top three quarterbacks of all time. But Rodgers, of course, phenomenal. Yes, the offense, Doug, it just continues week after week. And this just shows you, if Aaron Rodgers had a little bit of a schematical advantage the last few years, what would he have done? Because this is no Davante Adams for 3 weeks in a row, and it doesn't matter. And he's clearly their most talented guy. But what they've done is, we talked about it a lot, I know, they started out the year, run. We're going to run the ball and play action pass. And they got some new drop back pass game plan design. And it all just continues to grow every week. Every week I look and go, oop, there's three or four new route combinations off the play action pass. Ooh, I've never seen Aaron Rodgers drop back and have this route concept in the drop back pass game. So it's really, I think, the inventory starting to get deeper and deeper, and they have a good pass-protecting O-line who's getting better at run blocking, and I think he's feeling the offense a little bit. And as we see, it just doesn't matter who's around him when he's feeling the offense and the talent that he has, he can make it happen. And they're like the vice versa mode as they were early in the year, where it was, hey, defense is carrying the offense. The defense is falling apart right now. I'm a little worried about them. And the Green Bay Packer offense has hit the, ooh, we're about to be special here in the NFL, and I think is going to be carrying the Packers defense from here on out.
Chris Sims joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Was it Dak, or was it that he had his guys back?
Certainly helped to have his guys back. Helps that your defense, you know, creates two short fields to start the game. I would say this, though, through their three-game losing streak, you know, the defense, and you've heard me say this, I wish they would be more creative on the defensive side of the ball. They do, like, two things, and their adjustments are usually, you know, play harder or hit harder. That's all they adjust to as far as in Dallas on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, hey, they had some people letting them down. I mean, whether it was Dak Prescott with some untimely turnovers during the three losses in a row, Amari Cooper gets a little banged up in the Jets game, you know, guys getting penalties, tackles being hurt. I still believe in Dallas. They're extremely talented, and I think the offense has plenty of creativity this year to where they can kind of keep this mojo going. And I really will be shocked if they're still not, you know, in the, we're one of the better teams in the NFC conversation come December.
Are you buying the Vikings?
I am buying the Vikings, and I wouldn't have said that 3 weeks ago. But is another team a lot like Green Bay, Doug? Every week I turn it on, I go, oh, no, more bootleg versions. Ooh, more play-action combinations. I mean, they must be leading football in play-action and bootlegs. And I don't know that, but I watch film every week, and my gut tells me that they're up there. It's running the football, and then it's play-action pass off of it. It's a great combination. It's what New England did last year, and the Rams have been doing and all that. And I think you're seeing a lot of the better offensive minds catch on to that and realize it's a very effective way to play.
I look at the San Francisco 49ers, and I know it was terrible weather.
Yeah.
But is Jimmy Garoppolo good enough for the rest of this team?
Well, it's the biggest question on the team. It's the lone remaining question. I mean, if you made me pencil the Super Bowl right now, I'm going it's Patriots 49ers. And, of course, I have more confidence in the Patriots, you know, and for obvious reasons. But with Garoppolo, I think that's the last thing we need to see. Like, on the day their defense isn't dominant and maybe their run game is struggling, will Jimmy Garoppolo be able to go, you know, 32 for 40 for 380 yards and three touchdowns and no interceptions? I'm not sure about that yet. And, if you know, maybe he never will have to. But I think clearly those are the two best teams in football right now. And, man, that would be quite the storyline of a Super Bowl, the 49ers versus the Patriots.
Great stuff as always, Chris. Thanks so much for being our guest.
You're the man, Doug. I'll talk to you, dude.
Chris Sims joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
He's Rick Bucher. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Buke, are you buying that the Pelicans aren't concerned about the weight of Zion Williamson?
No, not for a second. It whether it is good weight or it's bad weight, the fact of the matter is that we've said it many a time. We've never seen anybody like him in terms of that size and move in that way. And while that is unique and entertaining, it also raises the question, when it comes to 82 games, is someone built to be that size and move the way that he does? And so, yeah, look, whether it's good weight or bad weight, whether he's in elite condition or not, the fact of the matter is that the wear and tear of the NBA game and his explosiveness could ultimately work against him. I hate to say it, and I hate to make the comparison because of the history, but can't help but think of Derrick Rose, who not obviously as big, but same sort of explosive torque on his body.
Right.
And I just wonder whether that's something. It's certainly something to be concerned about and to keep an eye on. Hope it's not true, but if this ends up being an issue, I can't, you know, their protest aside, I don't know that anybody is going to be shocked if Zion ends up having some issues.
Rick Bucher joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Buke, what's left in Toronto?
I think a very good team. This is what kind of shocks me, is that people are dismissing them and putting them, I don't know, middle of the pack. Yeah, they're a playoff team. They're not going to be nearly as good. First of all, I don't see anybody in the West, or in the East, rather, that scares me, that is a prohibitive favorite. And I include the Milwaukee Bucks in that. I still need to see Giannis Antetokounmpo take the next step. And then the second part is there's that just that institutional knowledge of what they went through collectively and some of the young pieces that they have that can grow, specifically Pascal Siakam. So ultimately, I look forward to seeing what they can be, but I have no reason to think that they can't be in the mix at the top of the Eastern Conference.
Most surprising contract extension in terms of dollar figure is who?
Probably DeJounte Murray. I mean, it makes sense when it comes to the Spurs, but based on everything that I had seen up to now, I wasn't necessarily sold. Maybe he had a great offseason and convinced them what he can be. It's not crazy money, but it's one of those where why not? I mean, do you think, unless they think that they're getting a bargain now, he's going to be infinitely better, could have taken the wait-and-see approach in my mind.
Lakers Clips tonight at Staples Center. Let's first start with the Clippers. The assumption is they're going to be there in the end, but what are they going to look like without Paul George and adding Kawhi Leonard to a team that had great cohesiveness, but it's going to have to kind of change who they are?
Yeah, well, the good thing is that I really think that they're trying to change their template. They were much more of an offensive team than a defensive team last year. They've added a lot of pieces quietly that I believe can fit that. They want to be, and I was just told this on good authority, and I don't know if you knew this, but Steve Ballmer has a thing about the Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boys, and the Chauncey Billups, that he wants a tough physical team. That's the way they want to play, and kind of Doc wants to play that way too. And so they've maneuvered themselves into being more of that kind of team. And with that in mind, getting Kawhi and having him lead that charge, I think is perfect for them. Where they're going to miss Paul George in my mind is when I look at that roster, I need playmakers. And Kawhi draws a lot of attention and will give the ball up. I don't see him as the quintessential passer playmaker. I think Paul can be that. Patrick Beverley's not really that. You look across their roster, they don't really have that. Lou Williams really isn't that. So that to me is where they're going to miss him. But since they have this new template of we want to be a defensive team first, we want to be a physical team first, I believe that they can do just fine until Paul shows up.
All right, what about the Lakers? Kind of wishy-washy on Kyle Kuzma. What's the real story with Kuzma?
I was just at shoot around this morning. He was running through, you know, five on none. So he is moving around. Don't get a sense of. I don't have any more insight in terms of when we will see him than anybody else. But I don't know where to put that. I will say they need him. They need to, and I don't even know if they have him, if he's enough. Because this is the distinction. What, for me, the Clippers want to be defensively, that's my question with the Lakers. What are they going to be defensively? And are they just going to be an offensive team? I don't know that ultimately gets you there. I believe that you have to have a defensive stinginess to you, and your best players have to lead you in that direction. what is LeBron James? Brian Windhorst did a piece today for ESPN that, to me, was the question last year already. I thought that LeBron needed to lead them defensively if they were going to be the best that they could be. That hasn't changed for this year. I believe that that's where he has to set the tone and the template for this team. And if he doesn't, then I think they'll be good. I think they'll be dangerous. But I ultimately don't see them as being the best in the West.
Great stuff as always, Rick Bucher, who will be at Clippers versus Lakers tonight. Last thing, we spend so much time talking about LeBron, so much time talking about Kawhi.
Yeah.
Denver, Utah, Portland, who's the other team that's most worthy of us to keep our eye on?
Boy, that's a great question.
I know. I'm good at what I do.
It's a great question. I don't know how Denver gets better. Like, I think they're really good, but I feel as if they're maximizing what they are. Utah, I just think, I guess, how much does Mike Conley bring to the table? If Mike Conley stays healthy, then I like them. If he can't, then I think that we're same
spot. What about Portland, real quick?
Then the Trailblazers for me are by default, they're the team because we never count them in. But it's so wide open in the West right now. This could be that needle, that eye of the needle that they walk through and Damian truly gets his one shot at winning a championship.
Great stuff. Rick Bucher, he'll be at the game tonight. You can check out all his commentary on Fox Sports 1 tomorrow. Bucher, thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, Doug.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
The Patriots, so far this season, have had the easiest schedule of anybody in the NFL, causing many of you to say, Gottlieb, they ain't played nobody. They ain't played nobody. Which, you're not all the way wrong, but you are kind of wrong. Like, what do you mean? There's calculations done that say they have the easiest schedule, and the 49ers, also undefeated, have the second easiest schedule. Okay. Which is probably why both teams are undefeated. Right? But the Buffalo Bills are 5-1. Who is that one? No. The Pittsburgh Steelers are only 2-4, but when the Pittsburgh Steelers played in New England, it was the first week of the season, did they or did they not have Ben Roethlisberger, as their quarterback? That did happen, correct? Now look, the Giants, the Redskins, the Jets twice, especially when they play the Jets without Sam Darnold, or last night when they played him without their two starting offensive linemen. They've already had issues at center. Like, those aren't great teams. I'm not going to sit here and convince you that they're great teams. But considering they went to the last two Super Bowls, had the ball down five, a chance to win one 2 years ago, did win last year's Super Bowl. Like, and, you know, for the last, I don't know, 18 years, they've been kind of competitive. Like, when it's a Johnny come lately, then it's fair to go, hey, they ain't played anybody. When it's Dak Prescott and you're trying to figure out how good a quarterback he is and the teams that he lights up are the Redskins, the Dolphins, and the Giants, that's fine. It's fine to point that out. But if you're going to take away from the Patriots and go, like, they ain't played nobody, remember, they beat Buffalo in Buffalo. Buffalo only had one loss. Look, and they knocked out Josh Allen. If Josh Allen plays, maybe Buffalo wins that game. And they slaughtered the Pittsburgh Steelers when they had Ben Roethlisberger. Does that mean I think they're the best team in the NFL? I don't know. I just think they're really, really, really good. And the level to which they embarrassed the Jets, the level to which they embarrassed the Redskins, the Dolphins, the Steelers, I guess margin of victory is not supposed to matter, but in the NFL, where most games are decided by a touchdown or less, and they're just walloping fools, yeah, it kind of does matter to me. Because they've earned the right to live on their past because their past is mostly successful. Matter of fact, most of their recent past, they've gotten better and better and better. And look, they got Browns coming up next, short week prepare for a talented Cleveland Browns team. Then they go to Baltimore, take on the Ravens, a rival of theirs in the playoffs and one that right now would win their division. Then they go to the Eagles. We'll see if Philadelphia is healthier by then. Then they got the Cowboys. Then they go to the Texans. They got the Chiefs. These next games, all of them are playoff teams. And so you'll get a better gauge of if they're the best team in the NFL, if they're one of the elite teams in the NFL. But a blind man can see this is a really good defense. One that flies around. One that causes Sam Darnold to say, I'm seeing ghosts out there. The boogeyman. That's what Calvin Vannoy said. It's the boogeyman. That's great. Great line. You know, we'll see. Like, are we sure Jimmy Garoppolo's the guy when he hasn't played that great in the Niners against the second easiest schedule? No. But you know why? Because we haven't seen Jimmy Garoppolo play an entire season. We have for Tom Brady. The Patriots have two decades of success. Two decades. Different styles. Now, I don't know how Brady holds up at the end of the year. I don't know if he looks as old as he looked at times last year. But it's like a Scorsese film. Right? Are you going to go see it? Yeah. You know why? Because it's a Scorsese film. Right? You're going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'll take a peek at it. You know, he's got the new one out, The Irishman, which is very well received. Got The Departed, Raging Bull, Goodfellas. Like, he's had enough Cape Fear, Gangs of New York, Casino. He's had enough where you're like, I'm going to go see it. Is it his best film? Don't know. Don't care. It's going to be a Scorsese. It's going to be well shot. It's probably going to have, you know, Leo in it, right? Pretty good chance Leo's in it. Maybe De Niro's in it. I mean, take a look at The Irishman. All right, The Irishman is out now. And De Niro, by the way, and Erwin Winkler produced it. Do you guys know who Erwin Winkler is? It's the Fonz. That's Henry Winkler. That's not Erwin Winkler? Different guy? My bad. We could delete that part. I thought they were the same guy. Different Winkler. But I don't know if it's great, but I know I'm going to go watch it. De Niro's in it. Joe Pesci's in it. Pacino's in it. Ray Romano's in it. Like, man, Pesci, Romano, Pacino, De Niro, Scorsese. I'm in. All the way in. Well, you know, it's a shot with how many good gangster films are there that he's done? Enough. He gets the benefit of the doubt. It's the same thing with the Patriots. Patriots have had enough good season to where they get off to a super hot start, coming off of a Super Bowl, appear to have made their defense even better. Continue to add pieces, and now it's supposed to go like, well, they ain't played anybody. Okay. It's fair. I don't know if they're 7-0 good. I don't know if they're as good as they looked last night, or if it's simply a case of a team without two of their starting offensive linemen with an inexperienced quarterback, a coach who is a little bit overwhelmed as well. I don't know. But I'm allowed to believe they're really, 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 really good, right? Is The Irishman his best film? I don't know. Wolf of Wall Street, Departed, Aviator, Cape Fear, Casino. Like, I got enough where I can go and draw on, like, man, there are so many good. I mentioned Gangs of New York. Their best team was 18-0 and lost in the Super Bowl to the New York Giants. That's a big comparison. We got a long way to go to get there. In the meantime, I'm kind of enjoying the fact that this team hasn't had to figure out who they are or what they are early in the season. And now they get to the meat of their schedule. They add another piece in Mohamed Sanu today. And we'll see if they get even better. Browns, Ravens, Eagles, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs, maybe the Chiefs without Mahomes. But still, you want a tough schedule? That day is coming. That day is here.